From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Friday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parm, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. We are in the same place for the first time in a while today. Neil, back from, has it really been 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Yeah, you were going to California, then you were going to Atlanta. You've been all over God's creation here recently.
I have been in the last 2 weeks. I've been to San Francisco, Los Angeles, Atlanta, and Rome.
Rome. Yeah.
I've been in Rome.
Was it built in a day?
It's possible.
Did you experience anything when in Rome that you felt like you needed to do?
I just took in the sights and sounds of Rome.
Okay. Is the minor league team still there, or did it get moved? There used to be a minor league team.
In Rome?
Yeah.
I did not do anything related to baseball in Rome.
It was a Braves affiliate. It used to be there. I don't know if it's still there or not.
It's an odd place to put a team.
Is it?
I dealt with soccer in Rome.
It's their national pastime, if you will.
It was big in Rome.
Yeah, the Rome Braves are a Class A minor league affiliate.
How about that?
Yeah, moved from Macon in 2003.
Now, he was at the UAB soccer camp, and it was at.
Why was the UAB camp in Rome?
They had a camp in Rome. They had it at the Darlington School. It's like a. I guess an academy, kind of a boarding school kind of a thing. Beautiful campus, great facilities. It was cool. He loved it. He had a great time. Asked if he could go back next year.
Oh, already?
Oh, yeah. He really enjoyed it. As opposed to the camp in Tennessee where I think you'd have to drug him and drag him.
You didn't enjoy that either, so it's all good.
It works out.
This podcast brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Daiquiris, lunch specials, ribs for your weekend. If you don't want to cook, want to take care of a good meal, stop on by. Dry or wet ribs for the weekend there at the Oxford Exxon. Or go next door to the Oxford Crystal. Pimento cheese bites now available. Get your crystal with pimento cheese as well. Those options to you at the Oxford Crystal next door on Highway 6 West. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number to call. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. Tell him a couple of Fords that you're thinking about. Whatever. Ask for some quotes. He'll send you those quotes within 15 minutes in business hours. It's going to be real simple. You're going to ask for a quote. You're going to get a bottom line quote. It's not going to be any haggling. You're not going to go back and forth. He's going to give you a quote. And then you get that quote, and you can spend however much time you would like shopping that quote elsewhere. Or you can go ahead and say, yep, sounds good. And you can get started on getting your brand new Ford from Clark Ford in Amory. We'll make the deal even better. Near the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. Mention any of our podcast, and it's $500 off. The bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
All right, so here's the setup for today's show. Jeffrey Wright will join us here in a bit. Jeffrey gets annoyed by a couple things. We discuss sporting events that you would actually wake up in the middle of the night to watch, as we have both changed our sleeping schedules a little bit this week for the British Open, and go through that list a little bit. He compares sports to a certain team soap drama that he loves as well for about 10 minutes that my generation will probably enjoy, and every other generation will be scratching their head and have no idea what he's talking about.
Okay.
So that's on tap with Jeffrey Wright. A few things, though, going on in the Ole Miss world in the last 24, 48 hours. We'll get to a few of those here in the early portion of the podcast. First, Ole Miss had their appeals hearing yesterday. That happened. So now you wait again for probably not much news. I mean, as you listened to with our podcast with Ross Bjork last week, I mean, Ross said all the right things, but you could tell that there wasn't a whole lot of optimism and a lot of wins in that category coming up. But they fulfilled their duty as far as preparing the defense and the appeal. And if nothing else, here soon it will at least be over. That's the word.
That's That's the big thing.
You throw a party even if the NCAA comes back and says it all sticks. Go, okay, fine.
Yeah,
this is
it's over. Get past it. You didn't get crushed by scholarships.
No, I mean, everything's over once the bowl ban happens. That unofficial visitor restriction is a big deal that's so stupid. But if it sticks, that's the only kind of lasting thing that will be a hindrance to you.
It's funny how many people, like in Atlanta, media-type people, smart media people who don't have Ole Miss agendas one way or the other, because there's a lot of those people that do. But these are people that don't, would say, well, it's really going to hit them in the next couple of years when the scholarships kick in. And it's like, no, not really.
No, they've already been hit in those regards. It's the classes that have already happened that are the problems there.
Yeah, where they're going to get hit is it's hard to recruit into that NCAA wind, that NCAA storm. And they have a couple of classes that suck, that were terrible. All propaganda aside, the classes weren't good. There's not a lot left from a couple of those classes. And when those classes are gone and when the bad classes kick in as the meat of your program, they're not going to be a very good football team. That's where they get hurt. But from a numbers standpoint, they're fine. From a numbers standpoint, it's really ineffectual.
So the appeal happened. There's not really news value there. Just telling you that it's gone on. They went up. They came back, and it was very, very quick. I mean, it happened.
Was it in Indianapolis?
I don't know. I guess happened in one day.
They go to St. Elmo's.
Shrimp cocktail, right? Isn't that the thing? That's what all the guys like during the mock tournament selection.
Yes.
The shrimp at St. Elmo's.
Yes, that's why they are in the bag for the NCAA. It must be great.
Must be some great shrimp cocktail.
Yeah, I like a shrimp cocktail.
It's one of my favorite things, honestly.
I enjoy a shrimp cocktail, but it's not like a religious experience.
Quality steakhouse where you get a good piece of meat, a good cocktail, and a shrimp cocktail. It's hard to beat that night.
That's solid.
That's a real solid night.
You start off with the cocktail or three and switch to a really good wine.
Yeah. Leisurely, you know you're going to be there a while, you're just hanging out,
well, yeah,
all good.
If you're in a steakhouse and you're in and out within an hour, you did not do it right.
No. You sit down and order, I need the filet right now, thank you.
And I'll order in an hour, perhaps.
Yeah.
I'd have one of those shrimp cocktails. I'm ready for my religious experience. I don't know. It's about that. I hope that they enjoyed one.
So the other thing that came, or there's a couple more. I'm gonna knock out a couple smaller things before we get into something we'll discuss for a minute.
Because this morning was the first that I saw of it, and I was like,
"Yeah, you were completely out of it yesterday, obviously."
Well, I was driving all day. I had to go all the way to Rome, and then back. No, that's not correct. I went to Rome Wednesday.
You came back from Atlanta yesterday.
And then yesterday we got up. He wanted to go to the Nike store in Atlanta. So we were there when it opened because he wanted to look for soccer cleats. And the Nike store in Atlanta does not have soccer cleats.
That's a little strange.
It's a little strange because I've never been in one of the big Nike stores that didn't have a lot of soccer cleats.
No soccer cleats.
Like the one in Chicago, the one in San Francisco, tons of soccer cleats. Hmm. Anyway. So we did that, and so we had to go into Buckhead and then get out. And,
gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, so the other thing Ole Miss put out yesterday, and let me start here. When we had Ross on last week, he said tickets were down, I think it was 5,000 or 18%, or maybe both those. I know 18% is right, whatever it is. Season ticket sales not in a good place right now for Ole Miss compared to last season. I mean, duh. Credit to Ross for transparency there. Came out with actual numbers, told you exactly what the situation was.
Tons of credit.
Tons and tons of credit.
Yes.
That could have easily been kind of glossed over, and it wasn't. He was very specific and then made sure I was aware of the exact specificity of it. So credit to Ross for that. So yesterday they come out with this flex plan, and they're giving tickets available for $200, $199 I think is the correct whatever, but $200 for the entire season. All seven games, $200. Now here's the catch to this. You find out, like, week of or day of game where your seat is. You're just guaranteed a seat in the stadium somewhere. Well, if they sell 10,000 more season tickets between now and the start of the season, none of those seats are available in this flex plan. This is simply leftovers. This is what the opponents send back. This is the riffraff of tickets in the stadium, if you will.
Okay.
Here's where I actually, a lot of people are kind of making fun of this. And I mean, I get the optics of it not being a good look for an SEC school. I understand that. But a lot of schools do the mini packages of three games and two games and trying to make sure certain games sell out. And for Ole Miss right now, they're not going to sell out of season tickets. This is a way to get something from them. This is a way to extend revenue and not make it a total and complete loss for those tickets. Because, look, I've heard a lot of people say, well, what's the incentive to buy season tickets? Well, you pick your seat and know where you're sitting and you have a plan going in and you sit with other people that you'd like to sit with if you have multiple tickets. So, yeah, there's a lot of incentive there. But at the end of the day, it's like anything. I mean, if I've got 100 goods of whatever that good is, and I can't sell 80 of them for full price, but I sell 80 of them for 60%, well, that's 60% more than I had going into the day. And at the end of the day, to me, season ticket sales in general is all about optimizing revenue, whatever yes. that optimization is.
The whole obsession with how things look, this is one of the few things in life where maybe I get it right. Who cares what everybody else thinks? What difference does it make? I mean, do you as a – if you're an Ole Miss fan, do you really care that the Georgia fans are laughing at you? What difference – how does that impact your life in any shape, form,
or fashion? Well, and two, they're not. No one cares.
No one cares. So if you're Ole Miss and you have – I don't know what is eight – whatever the 18%, however – that drop-off, however many tickets that is, if your choice is to get zero for them – or to get, I don't know, what would that be, 30, 40%? I'm throwing numbers out of the air, so Ross, if you're listening or somebody, these aren't real numbers. If you get 40% of what you would have gotten.
Yeah, look, it's a very low percentage, but it's still more than zero.
Let's just use 40 for the hell of it.
Yeah.
If you get 40% of what you would have gotten as opposed to 0% of what you would have gotten, well, give me the 40. Right? You're better having something. I mean, if you go to St. Elmo's and they're like, hey, we don't have the shrimp cocktail anymore, but we can give you a small steak.
It's also a lot of fans that probably this gives them an entry into actually being invested in your program that couldn't afford the $500, $600, $700 ticket with the CGA and all that stuff, where now they go, hey, you know, $200, I get we're not going to sit wherever, but let's give this a shot this year. See if we enjoy it. See if we like it. What happens next year, you know?
It's less risk from an investment standpoint.
No doubt.
Because there's a lot of people out there. This is happening everywhere. Look around the country. There's a lot of people out there. Yeah, I've always used this analogy about, she says, baby, let's not spend that money on this, but I'll tell you what I'll do. If we cannot have to get in the car and drive 7 weekends, you can buy that big 72-inch screen you've been talking about. And that room down in the basement, you can have it.
Outdoor kitchen's a go.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been wanting to do that grill? Let's do it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to Oxford, Athens, Auburn, wherever. I'm not going. I don't want to go. I want to hang out here. I really don't want to give up my weekends. My weekends are it's that deal of I'll even leave the house for those 3 hours. I'll go shop. I'll go out, have lunch with my friends, whatever. And I'm not trying to be a sexist because I know a lot of women watch football. I'm just using examples. It's just people say, you know what? Instead of getting season tickets and going to get hotel rooms, and it's expensive. So, yeah, this is maybe keeps some of those fans in the stadium for a couple of years because it's long been my contention, and I think you're going to see this. Once those fans leave, it's hard to get them back, real hard to get them back. They go away for 4, 5, 6 years, becomes less a part of their lives. They get into other things. It's hard to get them to come back.
And I think also here, either now or soon as the season's coming up quickly, there are going to be some opportunities and deals for season ticket holders at regular prices and stakeholders as well to get a little more out of their experience also. So, no, I mean, I think Ole Miss is doing a pretty decent job of trying to hit every category here and make it a little easier on you, the fan, because, you know, we've had this conversation for so many years and perception and what Ole Miss thinks or believes. I have gotten a little more of a sense that maybe they understand what they're dealing with from a morale, from a fan base standpoint, more so than any other time in the last 36 months or so. I think for the first time, there's really, really proactive approaches to try to fix this a little bit. So we'll see. I mean, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's a lot of the same things here, man. We'll talk about it here on the podcast in a minute because we talk about it every single day, or you do. The year of the fan, I get the overall cynical nature of the fan base right now, but at the end of the day, you don't know how many kids that helps or whatever. I mean, if it works, it works. It's not for the guy who's cynical because he's already in and emotional and whatever about it. It's for those other people. It's just another perk that anything you can do along those lines is a good thing. This goes to all walks of life. I just don't understand the heckling nature of something that you're taking a shot at. You know what I mean? It just kind of bugs me.
No, what do you mean?
Well, just in general, like, you know, somebody does something that maybe is a little different or a little whatever, and so many people want to just make fun of it just because it's different or it's whatever or it's not what they're interested in. Just in life, I don't know, it bugs me.
Sure.
I mean, not really talking about the year of the fan, but that's just an example. You get a lot of fans that go, oh, that's really, really stupid. And, well, maybe for you it is, but if it helps, okay.
It's why, I mean, if I ever get out of journalism, I'm off Twitter. Gone. Twitter is an evil place.
I've told you this. Well, you and I talked about this.
And wouldn't miss it for one day.
Twitter is such a small subset of any population, any group, yet because it does create some viral moments in its own little land, people take it too seriously. Companies, universities, teams, everything, they give way too much importance to Twitter. It is such a small subset of the people you're dealing with that it should in no way change your thought processes.
We do it
as far as a mindset on Twitter.
We do it with our message board.
Oh, there's no doubt.
You and I do it with our message board. I would venture to guess the percentage of people who, there's two subsets here, the percentage of people who subscribe to our site and then the percentage of people who steal from our site. The number of those people, and when I say steal, I mean they use somebody else's password and they follow from a distance. The number of people who actually post on the message board on a routine basis is no more than 10% of that base.
The issue that we have with that, I mean, just a little inside baseball as we move on, is the community is basically the face of our business.
Yes.
So unlike Twitter, where it's this subset off in the land, the message board's kind of our front window. I mean, that's the thing that you're going to be judged by from a community standpoint. So there is more.
Sure.
There's more power to those regular 150, 200, 250 posters that post every day.
Sure. I guess what I'm saying is sometimes you fall victim and.
Well, you try to play it into, this is what the fan base thinks, and
that's not at all. That's not it.
No, that's nothing to do with anything. No,
I had this conversation in Atlanta, I guess, twice now, because I was in Atlanta for the Rivals thing, and then I was in Atlanta for Media Days, where people talk about, I had some people go, you don't tweet Ole Miss stuff. And I said, why would I? And they look at you funny. I'm like, does Twitter pay you? Because Twitter doesn't pay me. Yeah, but you'd get more followers if you get paid by the follower. Because I don't notice the difference. And it's that mentality. There's so many people in our field especially who are really impacted by what happens on Twitter.
Yeah.
Just tied up in it.
Going to get to the other news that you probably want to hear us talk about, even though I don't know what I have to say. We'll do that, though, after a break and after Jeffrey Wright. I'm going to make you wait a little longer after that, too. So we'll get to Jeffrey in a second. First, tell you about Locker Stockers. Take the hassle out of stocking your locker or your suite this football season, basketball season, or baseball season. The customer places the order, and they handle purchase and delivery to the locker or suite before game day. They also are offering an early sign-up by offering a 10% discount on the season package, if the customer signs up before August 1st, call 662-586-1487 or email info@lockerstockers.com for more information. A good way to take a little hassle out of something that can be kind of a pain as you try to enjoy your Ole Miss sporting event.
We've been telling you about Robert Gambrell and Gambrell & Associates for a while. Robert knows that many of the people listening to the podcast will never need a bankruptcy attorney or a Social Security disability attorney. However, many of you may be interested in reviewing your financial situation to consider asset protection. This is a part of what a good bankruptcy attorney does. Also, many of you have friends and or relatives that get into difficult financial situations. Gambrell & Associates helps many people work through There are times of hardship, whether that results in filing a bankruptcy petition or working to avoid a bankruptcy filing. Others are primarily worried about their credit score. For those people, many times they refer their clients to Brian McLaren. We'll tell you about Brian starting next week on the podcast. Sometimes people find the fastest way to rebuild credit is similar to what the Cubs did. Tear it down and start over. This can be done by filing for relief under Chapter 7 to get a fresh start. Whatever your needs are, you, your relatives, or friends can get a free consultation for 1 hour or more to help make your decision on what is best for you. The podcast is also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. And we're brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than 4 decades. And no one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's HarryAlexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you're looking for. And then send him an email, ha@HarryAlexander.com.
Now, Jeffrey Wright on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
Jeffrey, good morning. We are taping on Thursday morning. This is going to run on Friday, where we ran a bunch of interviews from Media Days on Thursday, so one day delayed. But did you get up this morning for the British Open? Did you set an alarm clock, have a routine, or did you let that one pass without you?
So I did what I typically do. I stayed up to watch the first tee shot, and then I usually watch the first the first three or four groups, so that way I can kind of see how the course is playing. And maybe I'll eat my words, man, but this thing looks like, I love how all these players whine and gripe and complain about the USGA and how they set up a golf course, yet when a golf course is this gimmicked and this tricked out, they'll never say a thing.
Yeah, the running of the fairways is what mostly bothers me. I think you're a little bugged by the greens, but the fairways bother me because there's no science to it. You don't know how far things are rolling out. I mean, on the very first hole, I'm amazed we even saw it because they've showed nothing. But Rory hits a ball into the left side of the fairway with a driver, and somehow it runs straight and right and then goes into a pot bunker. It was fairly impressive from an unlucky standpoint.
I mean, I know the Scots will tell us this is how golf was intended to be played, like faked out and whatnot. And like, I'm fine with that. Like, I'm cool with something different. My biggest contest is I am so sick and tired of these absolute sissies just whining. And the U.S. Open, like, here's my soapbox. It's the television event. If you want to play for $2.1 million, you might have to be a little uncomfortable for a little bit. Guess what? That's why you play for $2.1 million. You know why? Because you're here to entertain us. That's why the purse is $10 million. Like, I'm so sick of it. It's a television event. And Saturday at the U.S. Open was the most locked in I've ever been on a golf tournament. Honestly, most I've been locked in on a golf event probably since Sergio went down to the wire at the Masters. And honestly, I was more locked in on the U.S. Open, probably the most locked in I've been since Reed and Rory went back and forth at the Ryder Cup. It's a TV event. Someone needs to shut them up. I'm so sick of it. And the other thing is, if we're just going to let tour players make all the rules, it's going to benefit them. Like, I'm almost to the point where I've now found myself back on the USGA side, even though they do really dumb things. Like, clearly, we got a problem with this golf ball. It's flying too far. It doesn't spin. But, you know, square grooves on wedges, that's the real problem. So we're going to get rid of those. Like, they do really dumb things that make no logical sense. Yet, I am cool with them because at a certain point, like, you do kind of need a system of checks and balances. Because otherwise, like, touring pros are not, the PGA Tour pros are not representative of the game of golf. So I'm just kind of sick of it, and all of them can just seriously bite me.
And they whine because they get their way. That's why.
Exactly.
Everybody else always bows down and gives in and finds ways to make the next week where the winner's 24 under. That's what happens every time.
It's 100%. You are so spot on that. the reason why they go bananas at the U.S. Open is because they know, like, they've established that they're the ones that set this narrative that the USGA is evil and they ruin golf tournaments and ruin. I mean, for God's sakes, here's the other thing. I'm sick of everyone acting like that when Zach Johnson was complaining at Shinnecock, that Zach Johnson was the model of gentleman. He's like one of the biggest whiners on the freaking tour. Like, I'm sure he's a pleasant, nice guy, but he's a sissy. Like, when I think of like golf whiner, like, honestly, the textbook definition is Zach Johnson.
The dudes that were playing well weren't whining.
It's funny how it works that way.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing.
Patrick Reed wasn't whining. Brooks Koepka wasn't whining. Dustin Johnson wasn't whining.
It's funny how, like, here's the other thing, that these guys are so used to playing the ball through the air. And if they can't play it through the air and to a number, they freak out. The other thing that was driving me insane at Shinnecock was there is strategy involved in these great golf courses. Like, for instance, if you're on the wrong side of the fairway, you can't attack the pin. If you do attack the pin, there's a decent chance that if you miss your shot by 3 yards, it will end up in a bunker. That's why you're supposed to play to a certain side of the fairway. Like,
yeah, they were out of position and then complaining when the ball didn't stop by the hole.
Well, get in position.
Yeah.
But they're not. They don't think like that. They just say, "I want to play to this number. I want to play to this." And it's just boom, boom, boom. And then the other thing is you throw some wind in there. Oh, my God. Like, I'm just sick of it. They're so freaking – while I want Tiger to come back, because it is obviously, like, today, like, they were showing Tiger on the range. And it's weird. I'm not even I was not a lifelong Tiger guy. In fact, I was a lifelong Tiger hater. But, man, they showing up on the range today, and it just kind of gets the juices going. You're like, all right, this is a real tournament. Let's go. I actually, you know what? I hope Tiger wins five more majors in the next 18 months, and then he retires from golf, and they have to figure it out, because I'm telling you, man, it's going to be, without Tiger, they are going to really struggle to figure out ways to make revenue and to have all these tournaments be the prize money that it is, because it is amazing when he's not in it how little everyone cares.
So I got up this morning about 3:40. I was trying to make the Spieth Rose tee time of 3:58, and I'm up pretty early anyway. It wasn't that big of a deal, but I got
an hour early for you.
Yeah, about an hour early. Seriously.
No, I was not joking.
Yeah, no, I know. I got to thinking about this though. I don't know. And now look, you're probably a bigger overall sports fan than I am. So that's why I'm asking you, how many events or games, if it was this difficult to watch them from a time of day standpoint, would you wake up early for, or really alter your schedule for, across the sports? I mean, obviously a Giants playoff game, or maybe even a Giants regular season game, but you're probably not waking up for just Cardinals Jags or something, which is what made me a little surprised. I went, you know, it's not like I have a rooting interest necessarily in one golfer, and I know it's a major, but I'm just sort of getting up to get up. And I thought, I don't know how many other sports other than maybe a Saints game I would actually do that.
I don't think this is a fair representation of what you would do under normal circumstances. The sports calendar right now is so dark and scary that we're lusting for anything. I mean, honestly, think about this. By the way, hats off to MLB, because I thought MLB All-Star Monday Night was extremely well done. I thought they did a great job with that. I thought it was exciting, and I thought it was great TV. I thought the All-Star game was really good TV. But when we woke up one Monday morning, the biggest sporting event this week was a golf tournament.
Yeah, no doubt.
And so I don't think you can judge. Like, I'm not sure if you would do this if the Saints were in the thick of a division race in November. I'm not sure you're waking up at 3:45.
Yeah, you're probably going, hey, they're going to show a replay at 2 p.m.
Exactly. I think it's just right now you're just like, I have to watch something.
And there's a certain event to it. Like, as dumb as this sounds, there's, hey, let's make some coffee. The house is dead quiet. Just going to get up and watch some golf and have some peace in my life for a couple hours.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I always would prefer to stay up than to get up early, just because when I get up early, I feel like death. But it's not really reasonable to stay. Like, it was great on the West Coast. Like, because, I mean, I could stay up, you know, watching golf from basically 10 p.m. to, you know, 1, 2 a.m. in college. That was reasonable. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't like something that was insane. But to go to your original question, something that I would wake up for. Giants regular season game for sure.
You wouldn't do it for a Wimbledon final. I don't think.
Let's see. I've woken up for Nadal Federer. That's it.
Okay. No NBA game unless I guess it was for some dumb reason the finals played in England. Maybe.
It would have to be almost like a deciding game.
Okay.
It has to be a deciding game. And then let's see. Obviously any Giants game, any playoff game in football.
Yeah.
If the Cardinals were in a playoff game, but certainly not a regular season game. Honestly, if it was a regular season game that determined whether or not they made the playoffs, I guess that's it. But I mean, to me, that's essentially a playoff game. So the same idea.
That's it.
Yeah. Basically, it has to be Nadal or Djokovic. Nadal or Federer, because it's amazing how Djokovic is so good, even with his recent struggles, like before coming into the Wimbledon. But like, it is amazing how good he is and how little I care about him. That's probably about it. If there were a big time college football game, I'd watch it.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fair. That's actually a good one that I didn't really think about. That one makes a lot of sense. But, I mean, you're going to do it. You're going to alter your schedule twice this year. You're going to do it now, and you're going to do it in September or whenever the Ryder Cup is in Paris.
So this got me thinking, like, because you're bringing up, like, sports and what I care about.
Uh-huh.
And somehow yesterday I started comparing sports to love interests from the OC.
Okay, how and why?
I'm not exactly.
Just the way your head works.
Okay, here's exactly how it happened.
Yep.
Yesterday, I think it started, somehow your brother and I wound up talking about football. And we were also discussing, we don't get how people don't like Major League Baseball. And then we realized if you gave us a KFM, or a kill bang Mary of sports, and you put college football, NFL football, and MLB, like this is the saddest thing I've ever realized. Like, I would have to figure out the most humane way ever to kill Major League Baseball, but it's a no-brainer. Like, I'm killing Major League Baseball. Like,
of course.
For me, there are two seasons in life. There is football season, and then there's waiting for football season. And then I even had this really sad personal moment, although shout out to me for some personal growth, because I really learned and I grew yesterday, or maybe 2 days ago. I think almost every single bad decision I've ever made in life has occurred outside of football season. I'm more focused, I'm more disciplined, I'm more happy. Everything in the world just makes way more sense during football
season. Even though you're eating worse and sleeping less.
100%. But I think it has, I legitimately think that I get depressed without football. I really do. And
baseball is your holdover, your palate cleanser. It's the way Kentucky does football.
Yes. And so it really occurred to me, it's like football for me is Summer Roberts. It's my one true love. And then I also realized there's legitimately
God, anybody not in our generation has no clue what we're talking about.
Well, then it was even better. This is where I really think I nail it.
Okay.
You know me. I love baseball. I am the guy that likes. I said it on Twitter and I stand by it. The crack of the bat on a home run is the best sound in sports. It's better than a swish, a pure swish in basketball.
Yeah.
It's the best sound in sports. And when you're in person, it's even better because somehow that crack of the bat is piercing in person. Like, you know, when you see, like, if you're in a Major League Baseball stadium and you see that guy just absolutely just rip the tits off one, it's that crack of the bat, and then it almost like hurts your ear because it's so loud, and I love that sound. There's everything about baseball. It's like the sounds. I love the defense. I love watching pitchers and hitters try to duel it out. Like, everything about baseball I love. I love a freaking pop-up slide. I can get excited about just about anything in baseball. But you know what the problem with baseball is? Football exists. So baseball is Anna from the OC. She is.
I love how you're just automatically Seth Cohen in this argument. That's the character we're basing this entire thing on.
Oh, hang on. Hang in there.
All right.
So if you look at it, it's like there is legitimately nothing wrong with baseball. In fact, under normal circumstances, baseball would probably be the best, like the best possible option. But then football season comes around and then baseball starts interfering with football season and I just need baseball to go away. I need it to go away. We got real sports to deal with here and that's just kind of where we are. And then basketball is obviously Alex from the OC.
See, I was even going to give Alex, like if you wanted to separate it, Alex is really like college football to you because it's the thing that really puts you off into a really bad place at the same time. NFL is what centers you.
No, here's the other. It's college fans and coaches that really put me off about college football. If I didn't have to deal with that, like if I were able to just watch college football, even though it's bad football, I would still love it. Like it's the fans and it's coaches. It's the hypocrisy of the sport that drives me insane so much. That's what truly drives me insane. And it leaves me just absolutely disgusted. With that being said, you can't discount the fact that once we get about to the middle of October, college football gives us 5 straight days of football, and they take off. The only 2 days they take off are Sunday and Monday when they let the NFL do their thing. Like, that's true love. Like, That's understanding. And not only that, college football puts out for like 14 straight hours on Saturday. Like, you can legitimately start watching football at 11 and not really go to bed until like 2. So really like 15 hours of football. Like, at a certain point, you got to tip your cap and just appreciate, while it has flaws, the heart's in the right place. And the heart is, we're trying to give you more football. So I'm on paper, I'm cool with football. But the reason why basketball is Alex Kelly is, or not Alex Kelly. The reason why, cut that out, by the way. The reason why football is Alex is it's insane, but it's also really, really hot. Like, there are moments where you're just like, oh, hell yes. Like, I can absolutely get with this. But then at the end of the day, you're just kind of left empty.
Like, yeah, there's a void with Alex Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just left empty. And then, of course, college baseball's Marissa. It's wildly overrated. I don't know why anyone cares about it, and it just annoys me.
And it's fine when it dies.
Yes. And no, when it dies, I celebrate.
But Seth and Marissa never really had a relationship, like, of any type, honestly. Like, never even really a friendship, if you think about it.
No, but then the other thing is, like, okay, I think hockey's also Taylor Townsend. Like, hockey's pretty hot.
See, like, I'm a Taylor Townsend appreciatist.
Right, but here's, like, the reason why. Like, there's plenty I can get behind with Taylor Townsend.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if I have to let her go and go and be with my buddy, like, I'm fine with that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I won't miss it. But it doesn't mean I don't appreciate it.
Yeah, she's a far better character than Marissa.
But Marissa's the worst.
Yeah, you're sitting over here with Caitlin Cooper ahead of Marissa.
Oh my God, I'm sitting over here with my cousin's character that was the big giant slut ahead of Marissa.
How often do you rewatch this show?
When it got on Hulu, that was a pretty big win.
What's your number 2 show in this category?
Ooh.
Because I know there's such a fall off. What do you have number 2?
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, I think it's Dawson's Creek.
Oh, mother of gosh.
But, well, it's okay. So the options are Dawson's Creek or One Tree Hill. And One Tree Hill doesn't have Pacey. Like, at the end of the day, I still hang out with Josh Jackson. Like, that's okay. He's on board. Like, me and Charlie, we're going to make it happen. Like, at the end of the day, like, that's what I have to go with. And you can't discount the fact that young Katie Holmes, she could stir the chili.
How did One Tree Hill last 9 seasons?
We had nothing better.
Is that the answer?
We had absolutely nothing better. And the CW had to put on something.
Okay.
So the CW took the approach of give them something that at least they recognize and give them something that they remember versus we got another vampire show in the works. What do we got now? Do we got vampire journals? What do we got? What can we do?
You know, honestly, this is really a big feather in the cap for Dawson's Creek that you're a connoisseur in this area, rate it second because it was also first. I mean, we're talking like 97, 98 for a debut. So, I mean, you're talking about it's relatively even holding up.
No, Dawson's Creek is the Johnny Manziel of this genre. Like, I needed Dawson's Creek to truly love and appreciate the OC. Because I would have had I not enjoyed TBS morning reruns of Dawson's Creek, I don't think I ever would have given the OC a chance. Like, ever. And then when I gave the OC a chance, I was like, I have found mindless perfection.
Yes, that is correct. What was season 3, the one you're skipping, or 4 if you got to skip one?
I stand by season 4.
Okay.
Season 4 was completely fine. Season 3, not so much. Season 1 is perfection. Season 1 is as good as that genre can do. That's like that's like Blink-182's Untitled album. Like, that's a masterpiece of that genre. Now, it's not like the greatest genre in the world, but it's a masterpiece of that genre. Season two, for having as many episodes, they only strike out like 2 or 3 times. Season 3 is an absolute abortion. And then season 4 kind of got back to what it did best.
All right, I know you got to go in a second. 30 seconds on 2 questions each. Is Oliver the worst character in television history as we close the OC? And second, give me your 30-second take on Jaren Jackson to this point.
How can Oliver be the worst character in television history when the television show includes Marissa?
Okay. Oh, Oliver's ahead of Marissa. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, at least, okay, here's what you can say about Oliver.
Uh-huh.
Oliver's annoying, but Oliver shook things up. Oliver kept you on your toes.
Well, like, there's also a positive to Oliver that you know it's going to end in a crash for him, so you can anticipate it and tolerate it because you know you're going to get that payoff eventually.
Yes, and it was fun. It was fun to watch Ryan squirm and act like he didn't care when he clearly cared.
Okay.
Like, he brought drama, so you got to kind of give him that. Like, and that entire genre is just built on massive amounts of drama.
And they could do it in more subtle ways where One Tree Hill just killed people.
Yes. Okay. Like, that was the other thing. It's like, okay, who are we killing off this week? It's like, in a town that has this much money, I've never really seen this much murder.
Yeah.
Like, that was the other thing. Now, with that being said, Sophia Bush, she can throw a fastball. Still.
It's slightly poor man's Katie Holmes.
You know what else I realized this week when we had Star Monday?
Uh-huh.
Our yearly reminder that Jenny Finch still has her fastball is that celebrity softball game.
Ooh, I didn't see it.
Yeah, she always pitches in that, and they always put her front and center, and you are always reminded every single day or every single year on that day. You're like, oh, yeah, she's still really hot.
It's going to last. So
why did she not get included? Like, we get the Kournikovas, Jenny Finch was at least good. Why do we never include her in the hottest athletes of all time? Because she was legitimately hot.
Like, she's got to say something just to softball, right?
Right. Which I don't get. Like, she was a gold medalist. Like, I don't get that. Like, why do we not promote her more?
She's the left out one of that group. There's no doubt.
You want my possible hot take conspiracy theory?
Why not?
I think she's pretty right wing.
You think that's playing a role in it over time this long?
Yeah.
Okay.
She does the God thing really hard.
Okay.
And then Jaren Jackson.
Yep.
I'm all in.
Summer League, you're all in.
I'm all in. And you know why I'm all in? Because I just have an opportunity to dig in on. I'm so sick of the cult of coaches in all sports. Like, there are some that are better than others, and I fully accept, like, I fully embrace that. But for the most part, a lot of these guys just have great jobs. And the fact that you had Jaren Jackson Jr. and you were trying to make him be a post player with his back to the basket, that is so absurd to me. And basically, you just couldn't understand that a guy 6'11 with handles and a wingspan of 7'6, basically you just said tall, has to be a big man. And so anytime we can tear down a cult of a coach, I'm good with that.
Fair enough. Have a good day, Jeff. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jeffrey, for carving out a little time with us on Thursday morning, which is when we recorded. The podcast is also brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. 662-607-7773 is the phone number. MasterCutsLawn.com. Let them take care of your yard all year long with an annual contract, or they do aeration. They build outdoor living areas, that outdoor kitchen that we mentioned a second ago that you might need during football season and in the coming months as well. So let MasterCuts help. Again, 662-607-7773.
As Chase mentioned earlier in the program, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with a personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons and without a 5-minute wait. OUB is offering one-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
If you'd like to make Memphis specifically your new home, the name to know is Stacy Berry. Stacy's a Keller Williams agent looking to help you find your special place to call home. Whether it's downtown, midtown, Germantown, or Collierville, Ray, born and raised in the Bluff City, she knows the dynamic and unique intricacies that the city has to offer. She wants to put you in the 901 today. If it's your first time home buyer or looking to downsize, Stacy will evaluate and determine your current home value and sell it quickly for top dollar. So if you're looking to sell a home, buy a home, or invest in real estate, call the Berry Home Team today and let Stacy unlock Memphis for you. 901-481-6420. Stacy Lane Berry, that's LAINEBERRY, at KW.com or at theberryhometeam.com. That's Stacy with an E, Berry, the name to know in Memphis. So getting to the other story that kind of took over our message board last night, I try to run through this best I can. Know that I'm being a little careful here. Some things that I can't quite get to at the moment.
You know, a lot of things off the record that you can't yet say on the record. That's bottom line.
Yeah. So, okay. This all got started yesterday. I'm going to read a screenshot of a post from Steve Robertson's username and whatever this is called Hell State Lounge. Okay. Don't know. I'm assuming this is actually Steve. It's probably actually Steve. Based on what I've learned, it's almost certainly Steve. So, I did not think this was where my week was going to go 48 hours ago. Anyway, all right, quoting, "While now is not the time to share the full details, I want to make you all aware of something going on behind the scenes that doesn't involve Mississippi State. In the coming weeks, there'll be a story making the rounds about a group of fans of another SEC school who had a private group chat on social media. They use this chat to communicate with recruits and in some cases talk about impermissible benefits. As a result of this chat, the school will have to self-report the NCAA violation due to improper contact between boosters and prospective student athletes. I'm sharing this all with you because it's important to understand there are lines that cannot be crossed. At times, social media can make those lines a little blurry. Let me say this as directly as I can. If you contact a recruit and or their family and have a conversation about attending Mississippi State, then you have committed a violation and put the university in harm's way. You could jeopardize state's recruitment in the student of the student athlete and create a real compliance issue for the program. In other words, in all capital letters, do not contact recruits. Well, he and I do agree you should stop contacting recruits.
I couldn't agree with that part more. I'll even go stronger than what he just did.
Yeah.
If you're contacting recruits, you're contacting kids you don't know, you're a creep. You're absolutely a creep.
So,
do you agree with that?
I'm all good.
You should stop and really reevaluate your life. And I hope you get outed, because some poor girl's accidentally going out with you, and she should know you're a creep.
So. To the best of my knowledge, I mean, I can't guarantee it, but to the best of my knowledge, the incident that Steve is referring to, Ole Miss had a situation where, as he said, a social media chat was being used to discuss,
like a Twitter deal,
some social media, Instagram, okay. Twitter, but yeah, either way, a DM group conversation.
So not like a chat room, but a...
No, I think just a group put together on a social media platform.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha.
If I put 10 of us in a DM conversation where we're all talking back and forth or whatever.
Okay.
Whatever the platform of choice was.
Okay, gotcha.
And the way I understand it is they were being fairly specific and discussing prospects, where they were going, potential ways to help said prospects.
You say help, you mean to provide
impermissible benefits.
Impermissible benefits, gotcha.
So it was brought to Ole Miss's attention that this was going on. Ole Miss investigated it, sent a self-report to the SEC and then to the NCAA. I don't know however that process works.
You filed to the league first.
Yeah, so yeah. I was told, I talked to Michael Thompson last night, he told me that they did not actually find any impermissible benefits, that there was basically the way they categorized it as a secondary violation because of impermissible contact is the way that there was thing there. But there was some sort of contact with the recruits. And the contact with the recruits is the secondary violation. I mean, had there actually been proof of benefits exchange, we got a whole different conversation going on right now. But to the best of their ability, they determined there was no benefits exchanged. The thought process with all involved, no one knows yet for sure. The NCAA has not filed their final report back, but all indications are that there is agreement that it's simply a secondary violation.
I've seen some people. Can I?
Yeah, wherever. Go ahead.
Because this is the first I've heard of any of this. Thank God I had not heard of the chat thing, because I would have made fun of it. People have criticized Ole Miss for turning this in. Guys, they would be idiots if they didn't turn it in. On the heels of a 6-year colonoscopy, you find out that this is happening and you don't turn it in? How insane would that be? I get people upset at the administration and they're upset at compliance and they don't think they fought hard enough and a lot of that stuff. And in some of those ways, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but in this case, absolutely being proactive and investigating it and turning it over to the SEC and the NCAA was absolutely the way to go.
Look, you find secondary violations, you turn those bad boys in.
Yeah, you write those up.
Every secondary violation goes in.
You write those up in blood.
Here's my wrist. Please slap it. I'll move on with my day.
Because you're lucky here. If there were no actual, you're lucky that this didn't escalate into something.
Yeah, and you know, again, I wrote this on the board last night. I've credited them with multiple things here in the last 25 minutes. I'm just telling you what Michael said. I mean, I understand there's scar tissue and there's a distrust of this administration right now.
Scar tissue is an interesting way of putting it.
It is true.
Yeah, I mean, not arguing.
Yeah, it's scar tissue.
Significant.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, reading through everything as of this moment, I don't see some cannonball coming down the road. I mean, if it does, then we've been in this world before. We'll be in this world again. But I don't think so.
It doesn't appear.
This appears to be a sigh of relief and something that probably happens, frankly, because social media is crazy. Probably happens at every school in the country. You just don't have crazy people trying to make it all public everywhere constantly. My opinion. I don't know. But
yeah, that's probably.
At least most league schools. The SEC is pretty nuts. I mean, you can't tell me Tennessee hadn't had this go on at some point.
No.
Florida State probably has done this from time to time.
My criticism, you're going to cringe. My criticism of the Ole Miss network, if you will, is twofold. One, I'm not convinced that the smartest people are involved in it.
Or they can't keep the dumb people out of it, one or the other.
And then secondly, my God, that's the loosest-lipped group of people.
Yeah, that's more the problem. You've got the hangers on that just don't shut up.
It's their claim to fame. The people that handle these things at Alabama do not talk about it. They don't talk about it because if you talk,
the people that really handle it at Ole Miss probably don't talk about it. Like that really handle it though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess.
It's the riffraff that's the problem.
I think, but Ole Miss, because the network is so small, the riffraff is able to get a seat close to the table.
It bleeds in a little too much
for
you.
At Alabama, the riffraff doesn't get involved. They can't get connected to it.
It's layers, as you talk about.
Yeah.
We use that word a lot over the last 36 months.
There's layers. And the main layer at a place like Alabama, those doors are closed. And if you talk, you get kicked out of there permanently. And you never get to come back. There are parts of the Ole Miss people that talk and talk and talk and talk, and because the network is so small, they continue to keep their seat in the main room.
I'm getting
except at Mississippi State, where apparently this does not happen.
No, everyone's completely clean.
Yes,
nothing ever's wrong. It's all fine. They're
just fortunate that they have junior college assistant coaches who have great lifelong relationships with tight ends.
And thousands of dollars of spare money on their salary.
JUCO assistant coaches make big money.
Raking it in?
Shoo. Don't you know?
Making it rain, as the kids would say?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of money in JUCO football. Have you seen the JUCO TV contract?
Oh, Scuba has one.
Oh, it's massive.
Yeah.
Oh.
Notre Dame at 3, Colin at 6.
Colin football.
Yeah.
If I say to you, cash powers in football, you think Alabama?
Texas.
Notre Dame have their own damn network. Ohio State. Colin. Kapiah Lincoln Community College. I mean, that's where I go.
Do you know Colin's mascot off the top of your head?
Bulldogs.
Wolves.
Ah, close enough.
I think. Aren't they the Wolves?
I don't know.
Did you just guess Bulldog because, like, everybody's a Bulldog?
There's a lot of Bulldogs.
And you made a little Freudian comparison there, potentially?
Perhaps.
Freud would say you had a thought process.
I'm not the best-looking guy in the world, I'll admit that. But I hold my own in the intelligence category. I'm okay. I can be clever.
We give Freud a lot of credit on what he's always thinking at some point, by the way.
Yeah.
Maybe he deserves it, but just saying.
I mean, I can be clever.
So what I was saying, though, is, look, I keep getting asked, and this is not the part that frankly concerns me. You mentioned this, I'm not taking your thunder. All this tells me is that just because the NCAA thing is done doesn't mean Steve is.
Yes.
It's not. There's no evidence that he's going away. I keep getting asked what his motivation is. I don't know, and frankly, I don't really care. That's irrelevant. I mean, his motivation, whatever it is, has been very persistent, very thorough, frankly. But I don't really care what it is. I mean, maybe it had something to do with the appeal being this week. Maybe it is going to be just a secondary, and this is the way to push it out to the forefront because there wasn't anything coming from it. Maybe he's got some other bomb coming that I don't know about. I don't know. But, I mean, as of right now, all you can do is take this on the face, and barring an unexpected decision to what appears to be a pretty standard self-report, it should kind of fade off into Bolivia, as Mike Tyson would say here soon. So, you know.
Fade into Bolivia. That's good.
Yeah. That's all I got. You got anything?
Not really. I mean, look, I'm not defending Steve. I'm not attacking Steve. I don't know Steve. I don't know what Steve's motivation is. It's within his rights as a person to investigate Ole Miss if that's what he decides to do. It's very clear if you're one of the creeps out there who is so lifeless that you're spending your time contacting 17-year-old boys on, in your opinion, Ole Miss's behest, he's probably watching you.
Well, look, the positive for Ole Miss here, and I don't know whether I'm using the right word or the wrong word, at least with Steve, you know who the enemy is. Enemy's probably not the right word, but you know what I mean? I mean, it's not cloak and dagger. It's right in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, what he wrote in the message board post, to my knowledge, is 100% accurate.
Yeah, I'm not aware. I mean, the only parts of it that let me find it again. I had a couple thoughts with it.
It's a little too. It's he likes to cloak things and veils and.
Yeah, no, that part was cloak and dagger.
Make it mystery and stuff. Come on.
Well, okay, and again, do I have a date on this? Well, yeah, it appears to be recent. If it was recent, as a result of this chat, the school will have to self-report. Well, that's already happened. That happened last month, 2 months ago. I don't know. Something like that.
You're filing a FOIA or have filed a FOIA.
Yeah, I will file a FOIA today, and then I'll just tell you what it says. That's all I can do. I'll publish the stupid thing and show you what they get.
Hopefully it's not redacted and redacted and redacted.
My interpretation is that it probably will not be.
Good.
Just because I don't know what you would redact, frankly. Yeah, but I don't even really care if they redact the prospect names. That doesn't bother
me. But don't redact the booster names, Ole Miss.
Yeah, that's the catch.
Expose your boosters.
The other part.
Because it's. Well, no, I won't.
And maybe he calls this. I don't know. In the coming weeks, there will be a story making the rounds, is an interesting clause. Kind of curious a little bit about that. Almost makes me if I'm Ole Miss, while I just because this has happened so many times, my worry if I'm Michael Thompson this morning would be, God, is that something Pat Forty's working on, or somebody where you're trying to make a big deal out of this because they're on probation? That would be my concern with that clause.
Because my guess is that Steve has screenshots.
Oh, I would definitely assume that.
And probably could get a journalist to take the screenshots and write about it.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's happening. I'm just saying that would be my concern.
Because you've heard names of players that were mentioned they're big names.
Yeah, at least one, yeah.
Yeah.
And again, no benefits were found. No benefits were found. Just make that clear again. Contact is what the self-report got turned in for. Contact.
Yeah, and it just...
I couldn't make it as a compliance person. I would be so mad at the idiots on Twitter and in my fan base constantly to where I would either be drunk or mad 24 hours a day.
Well, I promise you there are people that will listen to this that right now are pissed off that I've called them creeps. But I would say it to your face. If you're contacting a 17-year-old boy that you don't know, trying to get him to go to your school, you are a creep. And if I will expose you. I might even make it my crusade to start retweeting some of them. Like, hey, everybody see this. That way, in case his girlfriend gets contacted, she can.
You're putting a lot of assumptions on them all having companions.
Well, you might be right. I'm giving them way more credit than they deserve. I mean, any prospective desperate girlfriends down the road will steer clear.
I mean, anybody can typically find somebody if they really feel the need. There's someone for everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, it might not outkick your coverage, but there's some.
No, there's a few that maybe can punt the ball 2 yards.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Not everyone's going to have the football pulled out in front of them like Charlie Brown.
You would have thought he would have eventually learned his lesson.
He was quite smitten, and he was.
He really was.
He was.
And as cartoon girls go, she wasn't that hot. I don't get it. She was annoying on top of that. She was very bright, and he was attracted to her intelligence.
Is that what it was? It was the smarts that.
I think so. I mean, Charlie Brown's how old?
Not old. Elementary school.
And he's bald already. I mean, that
there's
was
a twig.
Yeah. I mean, he looked in the mirror every day. His self-esteem was not good.
And he's a little discriminatory. As we mentioned, have you seen the Thanksgiving table where everybody sits? I mean, he's also has a little caste system working a little bit, too. So,
yeah.
I mean, Charlie not completely on the up and up himself.
No. I'm trying to think which of the Peanut characters is the one that the best person.
You think they're all bad people in a way?
No, well, they're all have their own major issues.
You know, it's kind of like, look, it's a great sitcom. I still rewatch it this day, but everybody goes, well, you know, Seinfeld. I'm like, they were all terrible people. That was the point of the whole show, was that they did whatever they wanted, and until the finale, never had consequences.
Never.
I mean, it was just a complete debauchery every day of something.
That show was brilliant.
Oh, yeah, it's completely brilliant. The guy goes, well, you know, this stuff's like, yes, terrible person. Every single one of them. Terrible.
Yeah, George Costanza is
awful.
Just an awful human being.
Yeah, if you were a decent person, you were basically chastised by all the main characters throughout the whole series.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't really want Elaine in your corner. I mean, I'm just saying.
No, she'd turn on you in a heartbeat. Kramer was the closest to being like a good guy.
Because he was fairly out front. Yeah, he's very opportunistic. Yes, but yeah, he was loyal. Kramer was very loyal.
He was loyal. Yeah.
Gosh, anyway. Very, very dated show, but still fantastic.
It was fantastic. You know what's funny is when we were out in California, we were at Warner Brothers, and my kids have all heard of Friends, have never seen an episode of Friends.
Your oldest ones haven't picked it up on Netflix or anything? Mm-hmm. Really?
Knew it was there, knew the basics, but they have never watched it.
Because there's a lot of college kids. This has kind of been on the internet, so I'm like, a lot of college kids have found it on Netflix and in syndication and stuff, and their thought processes on how misogynistic and everything the show is kind of interesting, because, I mean, I watched it, and you don't ever really think about some of the different storylines that when you look back and go, yes, that was incredibly homophobic. Yes, that was this. Like, that was that. Like, yes, Ross Geller is a terrible person. Like, you know, there's that kind of thing that they're picking up some different perspectives that just from a new generation I would never really have thought about.
And the other thing was funny. We did this tour of L.A., and, like, we're on Rodeo Drive, and the guy's explaining, you know, this is where they filmed Pretty Woman, and this is the store. And
the big mistake, huge thing. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And the girls don't have any clue. And I said, do you know who Julia Roberts is?
They pick Julia Roberts
and
out.
No. I said, have you ever heard of Julia Roberts?
Yeah.
Julia Roberts. So I'm 48. That movie came out when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, that movie was early 90s-ish.
Julia Roberts was
megastar.
I mean, I'm trying to like come up with a comparable comparison today.
1990.
Okay. So I was 20 years old. Julia Roberts was a megastar, a sex symbol, I mean, it's hard.
She's a bigger, I'm so bad with movies now, a bigger Emma Stone or something along those lines, at least.
Okay.
Right? I mean, is that fair?
They'd never heard of her.
Well, okay. Here's
never
an example.
Heard of her.
Here's an example. I typed in top actresses into Google because I was trying to look for a current example. Even today, she was the third one that popped up.
Who were one and two?
Meryl Streep and Jennifer Lawrence.
Okay.
Emma Stone and then Charlize Theron.
Yeah. Okay.
Amy Adams, Nicole Kidman, Kate Blanchett.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that popped up on the first
never
page.
Never heard of her. Two girls that are really into pop culture. Isn't that crazy? Never heard of Richard Gere?
Yeah, I would say there's no way they knew Richard Gere.
Had never heard of the movie.
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild? It was like this.
No, you almost want to like sit down that generation and go, okay, well, I'm going to spend a day and I'm just going to show you culture. We're going to watch this movie. We're going to listen to this song. We're going to watch some of this TV show.
Because this is...
I'm going to give you an understanding of something
of
here.
Where I came from.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's...
And you have an inability to show even getting, like, in the rewatch, what that meant to us or our generation or your generation or whatever, you know, maybe, you know, where, when you're in the moment, it was, hey, this was a really big deal. And you can't convey that. There's no way to relay that to them.
I mean, that movie was a box office crusher. Everyone watched it. It was part of our...
There's got to be some Julia Roberts movie they know. My Best Friend's Wedding, Runaway Bride.
Yeah, but if you think Julia Roberts, if I say to you, Julia Roberts movies, the first one you're going to name is Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
Not only you, but probably 9 out of every 10 people who I did that to. If I say to you, wordplay, Julia Roberts movies, you're going to say Pretty Woman.
It would, if you told me to name one, it's Pretty Woman. If you told me to name three, I would throw in My Best Friend's Wedding and Notting Hill. 2 and 3, I think.
Okay. But you would say Pretty Woman every time before you said Notting Hill.
Yeah, not even doubt. Yeah.
Period. You and 9.5 out of every 10 people.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And you're saying Richard Gere with Pretty Woman as well.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because I'd have a little hard time naming some other ones from him. But
if I say to you, Richard Gere movies, you have no problem at all immediately coming up with Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
And immediately picture the role and everything.
Yeah, there'll be a scene that'll go through your head, and you'll go, okay, we're good. Yeah, I don't know. The discovering nature of it is interesting to me because, by the way, Richard Gere, 68 years old now.
Yeah.
Time goes.
It does. Most certainly go.
A couple other things quickly in a second. First, I'll tell you, Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting, understand your market. A leader in condo financing and the float down option, 662-234-2704. Or J Lo at communitymtg.com. Podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. They're in Holly Springs. 662-232-2321 is the number for Sildenafil or just to get prescriptions filled and have them delivered wherever you are. They will help you out there. They're also now in Oxford. Also, G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar. You give them a call because they deliver local in the Oxford area.
The Cheese Krispies from Billy's Pecans, now available in 1-pound boxes. They're fantastic. You should try them. They're my favorite. They're not that chalky, dry Cheese Krispies. They're just phenomenal. You get them in 2-pound boxes as well, or you can get an 8-ounce bag if you trying to behave. They've got all of those. They've got Southern Pecan Toffee, pecans and chocolate, pecan brittle, the cinnamon pecan coffee cake, which is fantastic. Others love the blueberry pecan coffee cake. They have jellies, sauces, of course pecans. It's all there at Billy's Pecans, billyspecans.com, or call 1-800-624-7404. We'll be taping a soft verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans sometime, hopefully early next week. So we'll catch up on that. Russell took a little bit of a break, and he'll be back, I think, late this weekend, first part of next week, and we'll get back to it on the podcast. This podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. It's hard to believe that it's almost that time, but as you know, because we've had SEC Media Days come and go, so the football season is here, sort of. Practices begin in a couple of weeks, and then September the 8th will be here before you know it. That's Ole Miss's home opener. You want to get your tailgate handled by 7 South Tailgating, because if you'll let them handle it once, you'll never tailgate without them again. They'll set up your own personal gear, or you can get everything from them. No one matches their customer service, their attention to detail. Whether you're coming up for one game, all of the games, or anything in between, whether your tailgate is simple or whether your tailgate is really intricate, the people at 7 South Tailgating can handle it and take care of you and let you enjoy the tailgating. Let them handle the setup. 7SouthTailgating.com.
The latest issue as far as layoffs and major news publications with newspapers that continue to just get gutted around the country, reading from some story here this morning, APSE retweeted it, so they probably are giving some credence to it. Staffers at the New York Daily News are bracing for a rumored 70% cut to staff expected to take place Monday and Tuesday, with Editor-in-Chief Jim Rich is rumored to be resigning in light of the bloodbath. A Daily News staffer told Study Hall, whatever that is, that the rumor is the company is calling in extra security for Monday and Tuesday in preparation for the cuts expecting a pandemonium as a large swath of the newsroom is axed. 70% at the New York Daily News. So they've already taken the nameplate off the editor's door this morning.
I'd like to take this opportunity to once again thank the people at WNSP for doing what you did to me. I've been critical of you in the past for what you did because of just the absolute inhumane, cheap-ass way that you did it. But you were protecting Alabama boosters, and you benefited me in ways that I can't begin to describe to you. I would have stayed in Mobile longer and worked at what would now be AL.com, and I talked to some of the people at AL.com this week, and their lives, their job, their work environment is a living hell, and I would probably still be caught up in it. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm indebted to you.
The 2018 Neil McCready would have quite the conversation with the 2008 version.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, I mean it, man. I mean, I thought my career was over, and it certainly changed. But wow. I'm totally serious. I know I'm coming across like I'm kind of being a, you know what, but I'm totally serious. If I saw those people today, I would say thank you. Because they pushed me out. That made me go. My advice to young people, totally seriously,
mm-hmm.
totally seriously. People sometimes come up to me now that I'm an old man and say, what life advice do you have? I'll give you some life advice. Do not ever restrict yourself geographically at a young age. You can always go back to wherever you want to end up. Don't say, I can't move to X because my parents are in. Or, it's a small world, FaceTime, airplanes. Well, go where you need to go. You can always go back.
Well, you know, in a lot of things with that, and I mean, I'm not a good example, but I've got enough life experience to understand it. Sometimes you've got to go off to come back in the right way or the right place where you expand that resume. You get, you know, learning that allows you to get in a much better place when you do come home rather than trying to just stay around the whole time and work your way up that way. I mean, there's so much knowledge and networking that can be gained that will eventually, if you want to get back home, get you back home in a whole lot better situation than otherwise. I mean,
true words.
You know, geez.
Absolutely.
So.
Because people say, well, what's your frame of reference? Because I'm criticizing myself here, not some total stranger. We stayed in lower Alabama because it was close to Birmingham. And it was close to Oxford, where my parents were. But bigger more because of where Laura's parents were. And that was an error. That was an error. My other advice to you is if you feel like the people that you work for would crunch you in a heartbeat, that gut feeling is accurate. Don't deny it. If you don't trust the people you work for, that doesn't mean you can't keep working there for a little while, but it does absolutely mean that you can't trust them.
The most meaningless thing in the world is the preseason SEC poll from the media.
Is it out?
Yeah, did you fill one out?
I did not.
Did you not? I did love Andy Staples yesterday. He was making fun of the SEC putting out their, they were like, hey, in the morning, rankings or whatever coming. And Andy goes, I'm really going to lose sleep over who might be picked to win this thing.
let me see. I'll tell you what I would have voted, so you tell me where I would have
I'm looking at the East first.
I would have gone Georgia.
Somehow they won. I'll tell you, though, there were – this is my favorite part of SEC Media Days is every team getting first place votes because they send media there. They got 271 first place votes, but there were still 14 other votes in the SEC.
I would have gone South Carolina 2.
They are 2 by a decent margin.
I would have gone Missouri 3.
They're 4.
I would have gone Florida 4.
They're 3.
I would have gone Kentucky 5.
Kentucky is 5.
I would have gone Tennessee 6.
Tennessee is 6.
And Vanderbilt 7.
Vanderbilt is 7.
Actually, I would have voted Vanderbilt 11th in the East.
South Carolina got 8 first-place votes in the East. Florida got 4 first-place votes in the East. Kentucky got a first place vote in the East, and Tennessee got a first place vote in the East. I bet whoever put that vote in was wearing some shade of really bright orange.
Don't you know?
At least with Tennessee, it's like a big caution light when you see the media wearing orange. Like, you see it from across the room.
Oh, God help us.
Oh, I want to tell a story right now, and I can't. Cause
why?
I just can't. It's a little too close. Yeah, no. Well, maybe tomorrow. Just remind me. Monday.
We're not doing one tomorrow.
Yeah, remind me Monday. Just okay. Mention Tennessee and big orange, and maybe I'll tell it. In the West, go ahead. I'm going to give you one guess on who's picked to win it.
I'm going to guess Alabama. I would have picked Alabama.
They got all but 21 votes to win the SEC West.
I would have gone Alabama 1.
Yep.
Auburn 2.
They got 19 first place votes.
Okay. I would have voted, after talking to people all week, I would have voted Texas A&M 3.
They're 4.
I would have voted Mississippi State 4.
They're 3, and they got 2 first-place votes in the West.
Okay, and I could not, after having talked to people about that team, I could not have picked them to win the league.
That makes no sense. No. But
I would have picked LSU 5.
LSU is 5.
Ole Miss 6.
Ole Miss is 6.
And Arkansas 7.
That is correct.
And I would have picked Alabama to win the league.
The big gaps are obviously a big gap between Alabama and Auburn, a big gap between Auburn and State, and then it's somewhat tight before a really big gap between LSU and Ole Miss. It looks like LSU got some third, second from people, and it looks like Ole Miss really didn't get above 5th on most ballots.
Yeah, I had a lot of Ole Miss conversations, people in the media coming up to me and asking me, and I just said, look, if you're doing preseason stuff, and every team has question marks, even Alabama has question marks, when your question marks are, can you run the ball and can you stop the run? Not or, and. When your question marks are, can you run the ball? Question mark. Don't know. And can you stop the run? Question mark. The answer is, I don't know. That's too much question for me to put you anywhere near the middle of the pack. Those are negatives to me that are outstanding negatives that just scream caution. And so it's not being negative, because if Ole Miss can answer one or both of those questions, well, then it's a totally different deal. But going into the preseason, those are question marks that without empirical data to make those question marks go away, I'm not prepared to hype them. People say you're being negative. I'm not being negative. I'm not at all being negative. It's I'm being cautionary.
Votes.
My friend Barrett Salee, your friend Barrett Salee, picked Ole Miss 3rd in the SEC West, and I can't justify that pick.
Votes to win the total SEC title in Atlanta, Bama 193, Georgia 69, Auburn 14. Carolina 4, Florida 2, State 1, Missouri 1. So, there's that.
Someone picked Mississippi State to win the SEC.
That is correct. You all right over there?
It's just dumb. I mean, I don't care. It's your stupid vote.
Preseason media, all SEC teams. First team for Ole Miss, A.J. Brown and Greg Little on the offensive side. No one first team. No, sorry, that's second team offense. No one third team offense. Wow, no DK Metcalf anywhere on it. That's a little surprising.
A little bit.
Let's see who else.
Any defensive players on any of the teams?
Let me see. Javon Patterson, third team All SEC.
Yeah.
Five quarterbacks made All SEC. That makes lots of
how?
Sense.
How? Ties.
Yeah, ties. Defense, nothing first team, nothing second team, nothing third team.
Yeah.
No specialist. That's the crux of it. So, we'll see.
First team SEC defense. We'll give you the names, the schools.
Defense?
Yeah, first team defense.
Okay. Alabama, Florida, Mississippi State, LSU, Alabama, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Georgia, Alabama.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really change a whole lot on the second team except for an Auburn, Missouri sighting here or there. A&M got several third teamers.
Yeah. So. And I'm not giving media credit here, guys. Media doesn't know what we're doing, but just you can look at school clusters sometimes on the individuals, and it tells you something.
So it looked like you at least thought about it for a second when I introduced it. What sporting events would you wake up in the middle of the night for? By reference here, I made the comment to Jeffrey that it's sort of interesting because there's not one golfer that I was dedicated to follow. I just kind of wanted to watch golf. I just liked the event. There's something about it to me, and now look, it happened every week, you wouldn't do it, but it happens once a year, where I like waking up really, really early in the morning, pouring a pot of coffee, watching golf, and I'm by myself for 2 or 3 hours in the middle of the night.
I can appreciate
there's something
that.
About that. Yeah, you don't like people, as you said on the greatest pod in the South. There's something to that. So I set my alarm for 3:45.
Okay.
Actually, the alarm didn't go off. I got up about 10 minutes before that.
So you got up about 20 minutes earlier than you normally do.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
I was trying to make the Spieth, Justin Rose, Kiradek, Offie Bonrat tee time at 3:59.
Okay.
That was my goal.
They're playing, for those of you who don't know,
the British Open is going.
British Open.
But they've heard Jeffrey and I discuss this, so they're aware.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I stand corrected.
Yeah, it's all good. And I said, you know, I would obviously do it for a Saints regular season game, Saints playoff game.
Yeah. The Cubs once opened the season in Japan, and I got up and watched it.
Okay. But it's opening day.
Yeah, I don't know that I would do it in a regular, like,
you see that,
August 2nd.
Jeffrey said any Giants game, probably any NFL playoff game, period. No Major League regular season baseball. He thought he would get up for a really good college football game. And he said if it was NBA or NHL, it would have to be a deciding game of the finals for him to do it.
I would get up in the middle of the night for a World Cup soccer game if the U.S. were in it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go there. You know, we kind of did that. Was it 04 maybe that the timing was, or 02? The timing was really weird, and we did sort of get up like that in the middle of the night, it seems like.
Maybe so.
Maybe. Yeah, for some reason, I kind of feel like we did that.
There's no Olympic event that would get me up.
The closest would be if you had a Phelps type swimming thing going on where he's trying to win seven and like something very historic from a U.S. and honestly probably swimming. It might be the only thing that I sort of care about, and I don't care about swimming, but there's something about the Olympics and swimming that I sort of get into.
Okay, that's fair. I'd let you tell me about it in the morning. It would be
the 2002 World Cup, by the way, was in Japan, so okay. We did have some time issues with that.
I would get up for a Cubs playoff game. I would get up for a Super Bowl.
Yeah, sure.
There's not much. Not much. It would have to be I got up two mornings in a row when the Cubs opened the season with somebody. Mets, maybe? I want to say it was the Mets. And the game started at – I was in Mobile. The game started at either 3 or 4 a.m. The first morning, I was pretty enthusiastic about it. The second morning, I was like, this is stupid.
Well,
this is game two.
You know, and it's funny because I did it yesterday because I saw it and I said, okay, I get Spieth at this time. Phil will still be a couple holes in. Get Rory a little later in the day, blah, 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 blah. This morning I looked at it and Rory was going really, really early. And then most everybody else was going really late except Tiger. He was the only one kind of in the middle. And I said, you know, there's not enough of the ones I care about in that 3 a.m., 4 a.m. range to make me do it. So I just woke up around 5:15, 5:20 and turned it on.
So I was driving. And a flipping.
Because, see, I'm weird. Tiger doesn't really do it for me personally. I'm not going to go out of my way unless he's in contention on the weekend.
He turned me off a little yesterday with the walking right through that little gaggle of five kids.
Well, you got to have some context here. Okay? Can I help you out here?
Yeah.
He goes out of his way 1,000 times signing everything. He was literally late for the first tee. He had to get to the first. He was walking literally to the first tee right there.
Okay, so had he stopped, he might have.
Yeah, they would have waited, but it was not a huge deal. But, yeah, he was. that was one of the few instances where he was on a certain schedule to get somewhere.
Far be it for the media to point that out.
It's okay.
Jeez.
It's much more fun just to say he ignored a bunch of kids.
Our field, man.
Yeah, whew. No, he was. It wasn't like he was just hanging out on a Tuesday and bolstered through some kids.
So believe it or not,
yeah.
Driving,
mm-hmm.
I listened to three things. I listened to a Thunder podcast.
Okay.
That they were saying that a trade was probably coming, and it did indeed come. I listened to a podcast about the RFK tapes that I've gotten into, which is really interesting, about the assassination of Robert Kennedy.
Okay.
And I listened to some of the British Open. And some of the commentary indicated that they believe Tiger's hurt.
Well, the public response, he has that tape on his neck. He did yesterday, at least. I don't know if he did today.
This person was talking about the way that he was walking.
Oh, really?
They thought that he was, something was bothering him.
He's played okay. Hasn't played bad. Hasn't played great. He's been fine. They said that he, again, I don't know. This happens a lot in golf. Sometimes I believe it. Sometimes I don't. They said he slept funny and woke up with a crick in his neck, and it was causing some issues.
Well, having spent 13 nights in hotels, I can tell you that that can happen.
Well, I think it's Louis Oosthuizen, in a golfer from South Africa, that travels with a mattress. He ships his own mattress everywhere he's going. But when you've got that type of coin, and that's that important for a golfer to be flexible every morning.
Yeah, and when you sleep with different pillows.
Yeah, well, you definitely travel with your own pillow.
Oh.
But he hates, yeah, I think it's Oosthuizen and takes it as far as mattress. No, golf on the radio, especially if you can get a European doing it, it's pretty entertaining. It's kind of relaxing and soothing and interesting enough.
Yeah, I listened for about an hour, and then I got tired of it.
The Sky Sports and the European broadcast are so much better than the U.S. broadcast because they just show golf. They don't have the commercial elements to it like we do over here, where it is a stark contrast. It is so much better when the Europeans broadcast it.
And I listened to some of the Dan Le Batard show.
Uh-huh.
I love Dan Le Batard. I know a lot of you that are hardcore sports people don't like Dan Le Batard because he makes fun of you. But I love that show. It makes me laugh. He had David Faraday on yesterday. And they were talking about David Faraday's struggles with depression.
Yeah. Had a son commit suicide.
Yeah. It was really one of the better interviews.
David Faraday is an incredibly complex, interesting person. You would enjoy his interview show he does on the Golf Channel. He talks to just whomever. And it's a lot of golf, but it's a lot of life. It's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had George Bush. He's had Condoleezza Rice, Matthew McConaughey. I mean, up Nick Saban. I mean, up and down the list of people. And
is it a podcast?
No, it's a TV show.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a TV show. I don't think he podcasted, but it's a TV show. So, anyway. All right. Let's see.
Have you watched Goliath?
No.
So, I'm in season two now of Goliath on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
Fantastic.
How'd you pick that as something to watch?
I don't remember. I heard someone... I'll tell you what it was. It was on Billy Bob Thornton was on the Dan Le Batard show one of the days that I was driving.
Sure.
And I like Billy Bob Thornton. He was married to a famous actress.
I'm staring at her. Like I see her in my head. Good grief. What is her name?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Hold on. This is driving me.
I mean, I'm drawing a blank. I'm not staring at her.
No, I'm staring at her. Like, I could pick her out of any lineup in the world right now.
Penelope Cruz?
No.
No.
She was married to Tom Cruise, I think, there at one point, right?
I don't know.
What? Right?
I don't know. I saw Tom Cruise's house, the top of his house in Hollywood, California.
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie. So they were talking about his marriage to her and why it didn't last and things like that. Anyway, I just decided I was going to give the show a chance.
They were married from 2000 to 2003. He has since been married to Connie Anglin since 2014. He has been married 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times.
God.
This is actually kind of interesting. He's been married 6 times, and to this point, none of them have lasted more than 3.5 years. which I guess if you're married six times, there's only a certain amount of time they can last before you got to do it again.
Give it a presidential term, and then you're done.
78 to 80, 86 to 88, 90 to 92, 93 to 97, 2000, 2003, and now 14 till now. Still going.
Yeah, so this is the one that's got a chance.
This is the one that's moving.
It's got a chance.
We've grown up now.
Because eventually you'll die.
Thanks. I was married to Tony Lawrence there at one point.
Tony Lawrence.
I don't know. I'm just naming names. Cinda Williams. She actually has a Wikipedia page. She's an American television film actress.
Who's Angelina Jolie married to now?
I don't know. I'll look in a second. hang on. Isn't that Brad Pitt?
Is it?
Maybe. Let's see. What did Cindy Williams do? Yeah, not much. Married to Billy Bob might be her main claim to fame at this point, best I can tell.
But Goliath is fantastic. Loved it.
Brad Pitt, they've been divorced since 2016. You can see how up I am on that.
Yeah.
So 2 years.
I don't do a good job of keeping up with pop culture.
She was married to Johnny Lee Miller, Billy Bob Thornton, and Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt from 2014 to 2016. Actually, I knew that now that I think about it. Yeah. I knew they.
Because they adopted kids and stuff,
yeah,
isn't that right?
Yeah. So, anyway.
Who's Rob Lowe married to?
I
remember when he was like the big heartthrob.
Yeah,
for,
and again,
for girls.
I can pick her out, but I don't know what she's necessarily.
He's more of a normal guy than like Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise and them, right?
He has a very. I mean, he still works a lot, but yeah, he appears to have a very normal life, if you will. He has two sons that must be pretty intelligent, or he just bought a wing at their universities. I think one went to Duke, one went to Stanford. Appears to be on a pretty good footing there. Yeah, he's married to Cheryl Burkoff, but she's not any, just a person.
She's just a regular person?
Best I can tell.
Good for her.
Good for her? Lowe married Cheryl Burkoff in 91. They met twice, once at a speed dating session. Okay. And again on the set of Lowe's movie Bad Influence. The couple has two sons, Matthew Edward and Johnny Owen.
Okay.
Yeah. So
good for them.
Good for them. There you go. All right. This thing has devolved here in the last few minutes.
I make no promises, man. I mean,
it's a Friday.
I openly warn people that as the week goes on, the show might slip.
Yeah, we'll be back in the studio at least for a week or so. I leave.
You're the one that has travels next.
Yeah, I go to town next Friday, I think. Is that whatever day the 28th is the day I leave. Actually, it might be Saturday.
Saturday.
Okay, we're good next week. We got a full week next
week. Full week.
I'll be gone through Tuesday, I think, if I have that right, maybe, something like that. So
there are, in case you need to catch up on podcast, I promised you that
multiple greatest pods.
Russell and I will catch up next week. There are two greatest pods in the South. One is
distinctly different greatest pods in the South.
One is the Drunkest Pod in the South Part 2 with Gabe DeArmond.
You weren't, but I think the as a whole, the group might have been drunker this time than last time.
Yeah, I discovered as we wrap up. I'll say first. Second part is Brian Matthews joined us. We did more than an hour of nothing but football. Nothing but football. If you wanted a hardcore greatest pod in the South football show, by God, we gave it to you. We heard from a few people that wanted one. We gave it to you. I'll be curious to see whether people like that one less, more, or the same as the
less,
other one.
Less,
probably. Probably a lot less. Regardless, I discovered Chase. So I'll tell you. I'll take you through my day. You tell me whether I have a problem here, okay? I'd gone running. I was out running in Centennial Park when Jay blows up my phone with, hey, where are you? I got this equipment. I need to drop it off, blah, blah, blah. We were going to meet Gabe and somebody for dinner, but they'd already gotten started with dinner. And so I cut my run short. It was 400. Atlanta was like much like Oxford, kind of like walking on the surface of the sun. And Jay's up in my room, and I'm like, dude, I got to take a shower and stuff. I mean, if we're going to go eat somewhere, I got to take a shower. I mean, I'm like nasty. So we went down. I was at an Embassy Suites. They have the little thing. And so
the cocktail hour.
I got us some beers.
Okay.
So I had a couple of the cups of like Bud Light.
Sure.
I showered. We went and got dinner at Max Coal Fired.
It's a pizza place.
Yeah. Neither one of us got pizza. I got wings, and then we split some wings, and then I got a salad, and he got more wings.
Okay.
And I had a couple of margaritas.
Okay.
Okay. We come back to the hotel because by this time Gabe has texted us with, "Where are you?" And we're like, "We'll meet you at the hotel bar." So we go back to the hotel, and I should not be admitting all of this on the podcast, but why not? You're all my friends, right? I had a bourbon. No, I had two bourbons. Just on a rock.
So by this point, we've had two bourbons, margaritas, and beers. Like, the mixture is making me sick.
And Jay had brought this plastic thing of, I think it was Jim Beam.
He does drink that.
And he was drinking it straight, and I had a little of that.
Could you be more? Okay, anyway.
No, I'm getting there. And then I had some wine. And Chase, I wasn't really, now I wouldn't have gone driven my car by any, I really wasn't drunk. I was kind of sober. And they were like hammered, and I'm like, "What's wrong with me?"
Yeah, Jay,
is my tolerance that high that it's a problem?
Well, it was over a period of time. And Jay was just drinking something straight out of a bottle. I mean, you don't know how much he was ingesting at this point.
He was drinking a lot of Jim Beam straight, I think.
Oh, my God.
And he would make fun of me because I like it a little cooler. I know you like it neat. I don't typically like it neat as much.
Well, now, look, I don't – Jim neat, there's nothing about that that tastes good. That is – I mean, no offense to Jim, but that's not one I'm picking out.
It's just straight fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm drinking Jim, you could even throw some Coke in that bad boy because I have no pretenses at that point of what I'm drinking. And I definitely want a little rocks on some water to dilute that thing down from the alcohol taste.
I was having a Bulleit rye.
Yeah.
Just on a rock.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Jim Beam out of a bottle. Very Jay Tate, but.
Yeah.
Everything out of the bottle is very Jay Tate, actually, now that I think about it. He's a very bottle guy.
Well, and he keeps making fun of my wine, and then he asks for it, and asks for it. And I'm like, "Dude, get your own wine. Leave my wine alone. And if you're going to drink my wine, don't make fun of it."
Yeah, he was in a little different mood, hammered this time.
Yeah, we had to edit a lot.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, we had to edit segments.
Ooh.
Yeah, we had to edit the entire segment about Boy George and Winnie the Pooh. That whole segment got edited out.
There was a segment?
Oh, it was a long period of discussion about
you
Boy
guys
George.
Were on the mic a long time then.
We were on the mic more than 2 hours. So we deleted about half the show.
Okay.
Because I think the final product was 1 hour and 6 minutes or something along those lines.
You've certainly developed your little running group, though, with Jay and Gabe at events that you end up at.
Which has been good because there's like actually – Gabe and I are so similar that it's scary. I'm starting to think that's my long lost little brother.
He just cracks me up every time he says Missouri. I don't know why, but it, just something about it, I kind of laugh every time. But I don't know. And there's like, well, there's a part of that too that Missouri has a lot of the same challenges that Ole Miss does. Like, there's a lot of simpatico just on the craziness that kind of surround the two places from time to time. So,
because Gabe and I were talking about 11 a.m. games, which, and I know fans don't like them, and I understand why fans don't like them. I get it. It's cool. Every time that Ole Miss plays at 6:30, you don't have to say, "Sorry, Neil. I'm okay with 6:30 too." When you're in our, when you do what we do, and a game kicks off at 11 a.m., you have a normal work day. We were talking about how we both of us get lots of 11 a.m. games, and we'll probably get a lot of 11 a.m. games for a while. And Jay just looked at us like it was four, and he's like, "Oh, you like those?" I'm like, "What, you don't?" And he's so – they're so foreign to him that they're system shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, I could go for a while on that, but I won't now. So we'll cut it there. It's become a very, very long podcast. But thanks again to Jeffrey, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.